Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another episode of 700 Level Radio. I'm your host, Kyle Lutz, with a very good friend of mine and my co-host and guest today, Ryan Waterman. Ryan, thank you for coming back on the show.
It's always a pleasure to come on, Kyle. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been like an 8-month, 9-month hiatus on the show, and Ryan's thankful for him to come on. So we'll get it started by talking about the two championship games, what very different games they were, and then we'll go from there into the Super Bowl. Obviously, Carolina absolutely destroyed the Panthers, who put together a phenomenal season. What a game the other game was in the AFC between New England and Denver. Now, Super Bowl 50 is coming up in 2 weeks, the first time that the Super Bowl won't use Roman numerals. Carolina currently is 6-point favorites, the over-unders 45. Denver 2 years ago versus Seattle, before they got crushed by 35 points, they were 2.5-point favorites. Before we get to the Super Bowl, Cam Newton's been on a roll. His last several games, I believe his last 6 or 7 games, he has a 24-2 TD-INT ratio. Last game, he just looked so comfortable in the pocket. Obviously, he's the only quarterback in history to pass for more than 30 touchdowns and have over 10 or more rushing touchdowns. What have you seen from him this year? Do you think he's the MVP? And what do you make of him this year, Cam Newton?
Well, I mean, really, it's no doubt that he's the MVP. I don't really think that there's anybody even close to him this year. As for what I make of him, I don't know what to make of him, to be honest. We've never really seen this Cam Newton before, so I don't necessarily want to speculate on anything that he may be doing or taking or anything, because that's not exactly a correct assumption. But it'll be interesting to see if he can keep up this level of play next year, because he's playing absolutely out of his mind this year. He's single-handedly thrown Carolina on his back, and he's taken them to places they've never been before. And it's just been astonishing to watch him develop as a quarterback. And part of me is wondering whether or not this is his development into an elite NFL quarterback. If it is, then with Carolina's defense, they've got some special pieces to make this a long run for the Panthers franchise.
Yeah, definitely. They had a lot of the same pieces as they did last year, but it just seems like cohesively, and I know obviously that starts with the quarterback, even though the offensive line is a huge part in that. Look at the Cowboys. Last 2 years, they had the best offensive line. Now injuries are a big part of it. My point being, Newton was kind of the piece that kind of put them over the top, even though, Norman, Kuechly, they have numerous weapons. I mean, even the guys that didn't make Pro Bowls or All Pros still have explosiveness. And last year, Newton only won 5 games. And it just seems like this year he did everything that he was supposed to. He didn't turn over the ball. He made smart decisions in the pocket. You know, when he was out of the pocket and he was running the ball, he got down and he didn't try to do anything extra fancy. He just tried to get the yardage and the first downs that needed to be. And
Basically, what he did was he took what the defenses gave him.
That's pretty much a perfect way to put it, actually. That's a really good way to put it. And going back to the MVP debate before I go back to Newton, I think Newton will no doubt win the MVP debate. But a lot of people think Carson Palmer is in that debate, too, because he had a great year. But considering Carolina's record, what Newton did, and not only what he can do with his arms, but with his legs as well, not to mention his leadership, I think Newton will win it. Now, Palmer did have a great year, 35 TDs, a QBR, or technically a quarterback rating over 100. The QBR is a different metric. He led the NFL in QBR 82.1, Palmer did, but what Newton did was out of this world, and you know, it's pretty amazing. And they have other explosiveness across the board on their team. You know, Keekly, like I mentioned, Norman, I think he had a breakout year. You just saw what he did with, you know, versus the Giants that game, you know. So it speaks to, you know, what Ron Rivera, their head coach, is doing there. He's done a phenomenal job. He was an Eagles coach several years ago when they went to the Super Bowl with Andy Reid. So do you think he's done a really good job? What do you make of Ron Rivera as head coach?
Well, before I answer that, I want to let me know one last thing about Cam Newton. What makes it even more amazing what he's doing this year is the fact that he's done it without his number one receiver in Kelvin Benjamin.
That's another true point, yeah.
That's absolutely amazing that he's done it without a true number one receiver, and that makes it, well, that makes the Panthers potentially even more dangerous next year if they can bring back everybody that they need to bring back. As for what I think of Rivera, to be honest, I don't really have any problems with him as a head coach. When he was an assistant coach at the Eagles, I always knew one day he was going to be a head coach. He just had that look about him. He just had that swagger that he carried himself with, that he's going to be a head coach one day and he's going to be a successful head coach. And it's really not a surprise that he's going to be a very successful head coach and that he's in the Super Bowl now, because look who he coached under. He coached under Andy Reid, and Andy Reid has produced some of the most successful coaches in the last 15 years from his staffs in Philadelphia. I mean, Ron Rivera, John Harbaugh, not exactly a successful coach, but a head coach nonetheless, Brad Childress, most recently Doug Peterson, the list goes on.
Steve Spagnuolo.
Spagnuolo, yeah. Reed has a tendency of picking up on these coaches and developing them into these really just like versions of him, and just they put their own spin on an Andy Reid offense or an Andy Reid defense and just go from there. So he's done a really good job of what he's done with in Carolina and surrounding himself with the right people on his staff. And I got to admit, the Sean McDermott hire has paid off dividends for them.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another good point. He, you know, he was kind of looked down upon a few years ago, you know, by the Eagles when they hired him after Jim Johnson had passed. But yeah, he's been amazing this year. And Newton's been a lot more aggressive with his arm this year than he was last year. He had a good year last year. Actually, throughout his career, he's been good, but just a lot more aggressive this year. He almost doubled his amount of touchdown passes this year to last year, 35 to 18. And he ranked second this year in touchdown passes in the league and ranked first in TD percentage, and had a QBR right around 100. And was very confident in the pocket. In the top 10 in various categories, yards per attempt, you know, you could go down the line. So it's pretty amazing what he's done this year. And Carolina as a whole is only one of a handful of teams all times since 1978, when the league switched to a 16-game schedule to go 15-1. But yet, if they win in two Sundays from now, it'll be the first time that a 15-1 team has won a Super Bowl in 30 years since Chicago won, and Ron Rivera was the player on that Chicago team. pretty interesting. So it should be interesting to see what happened. And me and you were talking a couple minutes before the show started about how amazing these teams' defenses are. Now, I would say these two teams' defenses and Seattle's defense are the top three in the league. But you go down the line under on stats, Denver's defense this year ranked first in yards allowed as far as fewest, in just over 4,500, fewest yards per play, fewest yards per rushing attempts, and fewest rushing, fewest passing yards. As for Carolina's defense, they forced the most turnovers this year, 39, the most INTs, 24, and they ranked first in fewest percentage of opposing drives ending with points. So you know it's pretty interesting. And like I mentioned as well prior to the show, it's also a matchup of two number one overall picks in Peyton Manning and Cam Newton, which you don't see a whole lot often. And also, there was also, it was also a first time that a number one and number two picks in the same draft class faced each other in Super Bowl. 2011, Newton was picked number one, and I believe Denver's...
Don Miller was number two.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, so there's a lot to be played on the line for this game. It's also the largest age gap between starting quarterbacks in Super Bowl history, too, for 13 years. So what do you think, Peyton Manning, what did you make of him in the game versus New England in the championship game? It seemed like the passing game extremely deferred to the running game for obvious reasons due to his injuries and his age. Plus, they have a pretty good running game as well, even though New England's defense is still pretty good. But are you convinced that Manning, at his age, a couple months shy of 40, can win a Super Bowl with his arm?
Well, first let me say that with it being Super Bowl 50, it's kind of fitting that this be a Super Bowl of a lot of firsts, with all those firsts that you rattled off and everything. Whether or not I think Peyton could win a Super Bowl at his age, I absolutely do. But I don't think he can win it single-handedly, just like he didn't win the game against New England on Sunday single-handedly. They're going to have to rely on their defense very, very heavily. And honestly, I think they can do it. I mean, you go across the stats, every defensive stat Denver is in the top five in. Yards allowed per game, passing yards per game, rushing yards per game, points per game. It's just incredible. I've personally never experienced a defense like Denver's this year before. They are just totally dominant all the way across the board. And there's a lot of Carolina fans out there saying that Cam Newton's going to be too fast for the Broncos defense. Honestly, I don't think that he is. I think that Newton doesn't know what's coming, and he's going to be in for a real rude awakening come 2 weeks in Santa Clara.
Yeah, I definitely... it's definitely a team with Manning under center that he really can't handle the burden himself anymore, like he did in Indy back in the day when he was, you know, when he was handing, you know, the ball off significantly less, even though they still had a great running game back then. You know, and you mentioned when I threw out those rankings a couple minutes ago at Denver's defense. You had just reiterated it. You had mentioned that you had never seen a defense like that. I have never seen it either. But looking at research, it reminded me of the 91 Eagles team under Bud Carson, who ranked first in fewest yards passing and rushing, just a team that dominated, and both teams that had great defensive lines. And in order to win in this league, you obviously – you know, most teams that win Super Bowls have great quarterbacks. Not all of them do. Point to the 2001 Ravens and a couple of other teams that won Super Bowls with, you know, average to below average quarterbacks. But you got to have great defensive lines too. And Denver, obviously, with DeMarcus Ware, who, you know, is kind of rejuvenating his career after, you know, never making it to the championship game in Dallas. I'm sure, you know, he's licking his chops right now in order to win one, especially for Manning, who is looking to end his career on top. Now, Broncos will wear their road white jerseys, some interesting news for the game. Despite being the home team, the AFC, the AFC and NFC switch off the home and away team each year, since obviously it's a neutral site. The only reason that they're doing this, because in four Super Bowl games previously, when the Broncos have worn the home orange jerseys, they're 0-4, and teams wearing the white jerseys have won 10 out of their last 11 Super Bowls. And Manning's only Super Bowl victory, which was obviously with Indianapolis versus Chicago in Super Bowl 41, was in a white jersey. So pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I never even knew that, and that just totally shocked me right there. If that is to come to fruition in 2 weeks, I mean, that's definitely an interesting stat to start keeping an eye on when it comes to looking at the Super Bowl. But that stat aside, I am really wondering whether or not Cam Newton can handle the pressure come Super Bowl Sunday. I mean, he's never been in a game of this magnitude, and all the Cam Newton lovers and the Carolina lovers can sit there and say, oh, well, Newton was in the national championship game in Auburn. Yes, he was in the national championship game in Auburn, but can he really handle the pressure of the Super Bowl? I mean, it's the biggest football game ever. To just throw it out there, it's the biggest football game ever. It trumps the national championship. It trumps pretty much everything you can throw out there. So it'll be interesting to see how he reacts when the lights shine really, really bright. What do you think? Do you think he can handle the pressure?
It's funny you mentioned that. I totally agree. I was actually thinking that earlier, that, you know, it makes or breaks a quarterback. And, you know, you're going to have, 70,000-80,000 fans watching over you in Levi Stadium in San Francisco, where the game's being held, not to mention millions of people watching on TV. You're in the limelight. You're being paid millions to do this. And your team went 15-1. That might be the biggest thing as far as pressure, the fact that you had the best record in the league. You have one of the best records of all time, and one of only, I believe, five or six teams to go 15-1 since the league adapted a 16 game format. So you better live up to that. You know, even if you throw a couple picks, if you're down by three, or if it's a one score game, and you got the ball with so many minutes left, you know, no matter what you do, you better try to win that game, because all the pressure is obviously on you. And obviously, Manning to finish out his career with a Super Bowl, and you know he's going to be throwing, you know, small, you know, kind of, I don't want to say zone passes, but he's not going to be throwing deep passes. So I don't see this being a big game for Norman, who, you know, is, you know, is been having an amazing year. Manning only had 5.5 yards per attempt in the championship game versus New England. There were a couple drops in that game, but he executed that game pretty well as far as strategically. And Denver's defense, like you mentioned, they put a whole lot, hell of a lot of pressure on Brady. I've never seen that many hits on a quarterback, ever. They only sacked him four times, but they put five times the amount of pressure on him in terms of hitting him. He was knocked down 20 times, and he was probably hurried, you know, several more times than he was hit. Have you ever seen the beating that Brady took on Sunday by Denver?
Well, now that you mention it, I think I may have. I'm not sure when it was. I believe it was the Eagles-Giants game back in 2007 when McNabb got sacked seven times. But it's pretty sad that we just sat here and said that Denver only sacked Brady four times. I mean, that's pretty sad considering nobody sacked Brady four times. That just goes to show the amount of pressure that the Broncos had on Brady. And going back to my point from earlier, it just goes to show that once you start getting older, you're not going to be able to handle the load anymore of carrying the team on your shoulders. And that's what Brady's starting to show. I mean, yeah, Brady is still a damn good quarterback, easily top three in the NFL. But age is going to start to take a toll on him. And let's not forget, he also did tear his ACL a few years ago. So you got to take that into account as he ages. He's going to start taking these hits, and the Patriots aren't exactly supplying him with solidified offensive linemen, and they're definitely not providing him with a solid running back to where he can hand the ball off 10, 15, 20 times a game. I mean, LeGarrette Blount's okay, but he's a goal line back, and Deion Lewis is a receiving back. They don't have anybody that they can hand the ball off to that can be a workhorse. They have receiving backs, and they have power backs that they can use in the red zone to pound the ball into the end zone within 2 yards when they got four down territory. That's where New England's problem is, and it's finally starting to catch up with them, is that they built this team around Brady, and they have no supporting cast for Brady.
Yeah, they got a lot of misfortune. They had a lot of injuries, and they still did really well, you know, considering they were a field goal away from making the Super Bowl, you know, even though they I'm not saying what you're saying is wrong. What I'm saying is it's insane the amount of injuries that they had. And
they overcame an incredible amount of adversity.
Yeah, and it kind of, and I dislike New England extremely, and it amazes me that they fired the offensive line coach just because of how many injuries they had. I don't want to go too off topic, but before we get back to the Super Bowl, I looked up that Eagles-Giants game in 07 you were telling me about. McNabb was sacked 12 times for over 60 yards and hurried for right around 20 times, and that obviously defensive line and the Giants had the likeliness of Michael Strahan and Justin Tuck, and obviously this Denver D-line is no slouch, so, you know, Denver's O-line is going to have his hands full. I don't have the stats in front of me as far as the amount of sacks that Denver's O-line allowed this year, and vice versa, you know, obviously Carolina's offensive line, they have a couple really good guards and linemen, but I think it's going to be a pretty low-scoring game. Manning was second in the NFL this year in INTs. Now, obviously, he was injured, and he's, you know, nearing 40, but Carolina, like I mentioned, they were first in the NFL in interceptions. So it's pretty interesting. Manning in that New England championship game last week, on third down, he was 6 for 12, 6.3 yards per attempt, 70.1 passer rating. Overall, Denver was 6 for 17 on third down, and they only had 3.8 yards per play and under 250 yards. As for Carolina, Newton just was absolutely nuts. He was 8 for 11 in the game versus Arizona, and they were 8-for-14 on third down, and he had nearly a perfect quarterback rating on third down with two TDs. Do you see a lot of turnovers? Do you see this a high-scoring game? I mean, that may sound stupid considering, you know, these are two of the best defenses in the league, two of the best in recent history. We could both probably agree on that. What do you make of the score and the tempo in this game? What do you think will happen?
I don't see it as a high-scoring game. Now, like you said, these are two of the best defenses in the NFL going, so obviously they're going to come out and they're going to play like it, because it's the last game of the season. They're going to leave it all out on the field. Do I expect a lot of turnovers out of the quarterbacks? No, because these are two very smart, very intelligent quarterbacks with great football IQ. They're aware of their surroundings. They take what the defense gives them on passes, and they don't try to force things. Honestly, I think the game's going to come down to the running backs. I think it's going to be decided there. In Denver, you've got C.J. Anderson and Ronnie Hillman, and in Carolina, you've got Jonathan Stewart and Mike Tolbert. Hillman and Anderson, they run a work share backfield, so it's going to be interesting to see who the hot hand is that takes over there. Carolina is pretty dominated by Stewart, but he has his moments. He's also really injury prone, so like I said, it's going to come down to the running backs, and whichever one makes a mistake first, I think that's where the momentum's going to swing in the other direction.
Yeah, because, you know, the defense, you know, really you're not going to see, you know, a whole lot of big plays. I see this as really one of the best games to be in recent history, just because of how evenly matched they are. You know, a lot of people probably said that you know, a couple of years ago between Denver and Seattle. Denver's defense is a lot better, and obviously they're a little bit more experienced, and you know, they've weathered a few storms since then. You know, I see this being, you know, one of the best games in recent history ever since that the Giants Patriots that first Super Bowl in 08, or that that Super Bowl in 2000 between the Rams and Titans that ended on the 1 yard line. Do you see this being a close game down to the wire, or like a one possession game? What do you predict the score to be, and who do you think will win?
To be honest, I don't think it's going to be one of those games where it goes down to the wire. I think it's going to be a lot closer than people think, but I also think it's going to be determined well within the 2 minute warning on the opposite side. As for my prediction, I'm going to go with 17-13 Broncos.
Oh, you have it really low. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go with it being a Super Bowl 42 type game, just not the drama at the end.
Yeah, and if you had to pick an MVP for the Broncos for the game, who would you be? Would you pick Manning?
No, I'm going to go with Von Miller. I'm going to say he's going to get at least two sacks and a forced fumble.
I could see that happen. By the way, for people listening, we're going to go over our half-hour mark for, you know, at least a little bit longer, maybe 5-10 minutes longer, probably 10 or 15 minutes longer. Von Miller's been a beast. That'll be an interesting matchup just because of Newton's speed and Miller's, you know, I mean, as elusive as he is, you know, you see him doing really well, and that kind of piques my interest. I don't know. I'm so torn just because of how evenly matched, at least to me, both teams are. I mean, you obviously have an aging quarterback that has been in pretty much every scenario possible, you know, first ballot Hall of Famer, multiple MVPs, multiple records, et cetera, won a Super Bowl, could win another. And obviously Cam Newton had one of the best single seasons ever and two great defenses, like we mentioned several times. And if your prediction were to be true, this would be the first time in since 2008 that the winning Super Bowl team would score under 20 points, which was the Giants or the Patriots. I'm going to say 23-17 Broncos. I wanted to say Panthers, but I just think the experience, like you had mentioned, maybe Carolina's inexperience. You know, this is obviously their first trip under this core of players and their only second trip to the Super Bowl in team history. I just think that proves a lot. And even though Denver got wrecked a couple years ago by Seattle and their defense, what I see happening is Carolina losing in a couple weeks and then coming back next year and then winning it, seeing, you know, experience is key and seeing what they could have done right and winning it next year after losing it this year. Should be a great game. Coldplay, they're doing the halftime show. You know, should be pretty interesting. So did you have anything else to add as far as the game? Because we wanted to switch over to probably hockey or we'll probably switch over to some Flyers before we head off. Did you have anything else to add?
The halftime show is going to be kind of blah, in my opinion. I think they could have gotten a better act than Coldplay. I mean, Coldplay is like so 10 years ago, it's not even funny. Beyonce I don't have a problem with, but Coldplay, they could have gotten better. So that's really my final thoughts.
Yeah, should be a good game, though. We'll see what happens. But so we'll switch over. By the way, the Pro Bowl selections were for the game next week were last night. You didn't happen to catch that, did you? I never watched that.
I did not.
Okay.
I did
yeah,
not.
I don't think
I believe in a. I believe NFL Network airs a replay. I'm planning on watching that, though.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think many people watch the Pro Bowl anymore. Even if they moved it a week before the Super Bowl to pique interest. Anyways, switching subjects. We'll switch over to hockey. Flyers have had a pretty interesting year, to say the least. A lot of people didn't think they would be in the playoff hunt this far into the season. You know, Steve Mason's had a pretty good year. They've been playing, you know, kind of up and down as of late. Prior to a few games ago, they had been playing really good, some of their best hockey all year long. I went to the game almost 3 weeks ago versus the Islanders, and that was arguably their best game ever. They had won 2-0, and they had put together a stretch of like 3 or 4 games in a row, even though they had lost Couturier recently, which is probably explaining their lackluster efforts recently, where they were playing really solid hockey. What do you make of Dave Hextall? Do you think he was a good hire?
Oh, I love the hire. I absolutely love the hire. The Flyers are playing inspired hockey right now. They're pretty much just leaving it all out on the ice for the most part. I mean, they're in playoff contention, so that's something to get Philly fans excited about. Looking at their schedule, I don't really see a whole ton of blowouts with the exception of the game back on October 10th, which was our second game where we lost 7-1 to Florida. I really think that was a kick in the ass, so to speak, to the Flyers. And it was a wake-up call saying, hey, get your you-know-what together and let's get this thing rolling.
Yeah, I think Hextall, Hextall, not Hackstall, both have, but I think Hextall has done an amazing job as GM. I also think it was a great hire. A lot of people, they want to go within the organization in any sports league, see the Eagles with Doug Peterson, although technically he wasn't with the Eagles when he was hired, but you get my point. A lot of sports teams, general managers and owners, they want to hire a coach that, you know, was previously a coach or was a player with the team. Now, a lot of times that may work, but, you know, to me, you know, if a candidate's a good coach, if he's a good candidate, he's a good candidate. It doesn't matter if he was here previously and didn't have any connection with the team or not. I just never understood the whole trying to appease the fans. I mean, I understand it a little bit, but I think the fans are going to be more appeased by a great hire that wins them over and wins games more than, you know, say, hiring a former player that does crappy and wins 20 games and you miss the playoffs for three straight years. You know, I just, you know, it seems like, you know, Ed Snyder tries to do that. I mean, I think he's being patient with Hextall. I mean, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but with obviously Holmgren made a lot more, like, he made like a ton of like crazy off the wall moves personnel wise. And as you know, Snyder is just extremely impatient. And with the Eagles, Lurie just, I don't know, I don't think it's impatience. I just think it's just a willingness to stay within the organization, which I don't so agree with. I think you should, if there's a good, like I said, if there's a good candidate outside of the organization, then, like, see, with the Hackstall hire, then go with it. What do you make of all that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that Philadelphia teams should look at the best hire as opposed to bringing back fan favorites. And for a time, that's what Philadelphia fans wanted. I mean, you look back at the time when the Phillies hired Sandberg. The fans went crazy for Sandberg. After their first losing season, the fans were still going crazy for Sandberg. It only took them till almost their second losing season under Sandberg for fans to start saying, hey, this guy's not the guy. Why don't we get him the hell out of here? And that's really been the issue with Philadelphia fans. They've really just craved for a long time bringing back retreads and bringing back people that knew the Philadelphia way. And that's not always going to be the way to success. Look at the Flyers hiring of Hextall. They brought him in. He doesn't know the Philadelphia way. He's still just chugging along right now, bringing the Flyers back slowly, but they're still in prominence. They're still in playoff contention, and they still have a chance to make the playoffs and make the fans happy.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. You know, I can see your point. I mean, it depends on the candidate too. It depends on the team and the holes and needed. And a lot of times, obviously, certain coaches are going to also be not only the coach or manager, but also the GM, obviously, with Chip Kelly. So I don't know. It's pretty interesting, but nonetheless, I think we're both extremely satisfied with the Hextall hire. I think we both can agree he's done an amazing job, and I'm guessing that you agree with me that Hextall has done a great job as GM as well. Well, I don't know, even if you dislike Hextall as GM, he can't be any worse to you than Paul Holmgren, who is his predecessor.
Oh, Hextall has done a phenomenal job as general manager. I mean, absolutely phenomenal. In the span of a little under a year, he's gotten rid of the contracts of Chris Pronger, Nick Grossman, Vinny LeCavalier, and Luke Schett. I mean, that's just incredible right there. That's
now,
just
if he can get
absolutely
rid of,
incredible.
And I read something, speaking of that, which is totally amazing itself, especially the Pronger contract, which, you know, which was – very extensive. I read something several months ago, a couple months into the season, that at one point we were ranked 27th or 28th in the cap in the NHL, and now we're, I believe, 12th or 13th. At the time, we were 12th. So, I mean, give or take, obviously, at that time, it was before we made personnel moves. It was before the Caviolet move. So the fact that you can bump up 15 spots, not to mention get rid of, like you mentioned, all those, you know, declining players / retired player, in Chris Pronger's case, contracts, some of which were extremely lucrative, and in the process get rid of some players who were extremely overpaid is amazing. If he can get rid of he got rid of Scott Hartnell's contract too. I'm not sure if you mentioned that, but I know RJ Umberger is terrible, but at least I believe there's a 3-year gap between those contracts. So if he can get rid of Umberger and Braden Shen, who between the two of them were extremely horrible. Braden Shen had the chance to notch a game-tying goal the other day. It just speaks to how overrated his – not I don't know, that was a poor choice of words, overrated. I want to say disappointing his career has been considering where he's been drafted.
In all fairness, Ghostisfair had the same chance to bury that puck against the Penguins, so you can't necessarily put all the blame on Braden with that.
I don't want to get too off topic, but yeah, I think we can agree that
hasn't lived up to the hype.
Yeah, and Hextall have been an amazing tandem. The Flyers won tonight over Washington, who's leading the Eastern Conference this year. They won in OT 4-3. Newberth got the decision. Voracek had 2 goals after an early slump. Out of the last 4 games, the Flyers' power play is 5-for-15, even though they have 3 losses in that span because they're conceding more than 3 goals a game in those 4 games. So they really got to tighten up their defense. But I think Gostisbehere was injured a couple of those games. So I really like the direction this team is going. A couple games ago, they had a few games in hand, plus they were only like a point or two out of the last wild card spot in the E. I'm going to check the standings now, but they're extremely impressive considering where they could have been considering expectations.
Absolutely. Right now, they're 7 games. They're 7 points out of the final wild card spot.
Yeah, I think it's because they've done so poorly lately, but they're definitely still within the hunt.
Absolutely.
So it'd be pretty interesting to see what happens. So whether or not they contend for one, it'll definitely ride on the top line. Definitely right on Steve Mason. Shane Gostisbehere has had a phenomenal rookie season. He's up there for the Calder Trophy voting, and he's up there in defenseman rookie statistics as far as total points, and yet he's played like half of the amount of games as a lot of these guys. But so it should be interesting to see what plays out, and it should be a good Super Bowl too. Not many injuries so far in the injury report. I meant to mention that, but I wanted to wrap up the podcast. I want to thank Ryan for joining me and for everybody for all their support. And we'll have a post-Super Bowl recap in a couple of weeks and look to talk to Ryan about that as well as about more Philadelphia sports. Thanks again, Ryan.
Thanks for having me on, Kyle.